At Red Barn, our pet food ingredients work overtime. They aren't just there for show. Dandelion greens work to maintain a healthy digestive system. Salmon oil works to enhance the immune system. Green-lipped mussels work to support joint health. These hard-working ingredients support your dog's active, healthy life. Look at the label. We want you to. Red Barn Naturals Pet Food. Simply the best. Find it in your local pet specialty store. Try our grain-free stews, the only pet food with Red Barn Bully Sticks.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, and welcome to Adoption Focus. My name is Connie Going, and I'm an adoptive mother and an adoptive consultant to Adoption Associates. Adoption Associates is an amazing adoption agency located in Michigan. They have offices in Jenison, Farmington Hills, Lansing, and northeastern Michigan. They have been an adoption agency since 1990, and they specialize in domestic and international adoption. During that time, they have done well over 5,000 adoptive placements. That in itself is exciting and amazing. They are very, very supportive to birth mothers and adoptive families along the way. They are a Christian organization, although they work with families of all faiths. They are committed to each child and parent, and they want to walk each family through the process on their adoption journey, supporting them the entire way. Today, we are very excited to have with us Kim Noth, and we are waiting for her to call in. But let me tell you a little bit about Kim. Kim is a birth mother. She's also the founder of Birth Moms Today. And in her very own words, she says, "As a birth mother myself, I support women throughout their adoption experience. Having been there before, I strive to make it my personal mission to ensure that women today who are considering adoption will receive support, encouragement, and the utmost of accurate information available to them by educating and empowering them through the process." So we are honored and excited to have Kim with us today. Kim, are you on the line?
I am, Connie. How are you?
I am wonderful. Now tell us where you're located. What area?
I'm in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, where we're having some blustery cold weather today.
Are you really? It is. I know there's a storm heading up the eastern coast. So I'm not sure what that's going to bring there. We are. We know that Adoption Associates is located in Michigan, and I'm in sunny South Florida, which today is just a little overcast, but about 78 degrees.
Very nice.
Well, it's nice, but no fall colors like you guys get, so I definitely miss that. For those of you who are listening, I told a little bit about just who you were, Kim, and that you're a birth mom and you're the founder of Birth Moms Today. But tell us a little bit about your adoption journey.
Sure. My journey in adoption started when I was about 15 years old. I was pregnant back in the time where it really wasn't popular to be pregnant, and I was probably the only one in my school that was pregnant. And I remember at the time being really scared and not sure what to do. And I didn't want to tell my mom or my family. And I remember the day when the doctor called, and he told my mom for me.
Wow.
So she found out the news, and, you know, she came to me, and we talked about it. And my plan at the time was I was going to get married at 15, and we were going to raise this child. Now, I really didn't have any actual plan other than that. So that was the plan we went forward with. And then over time, the relationship fell apart. As a matter of fact, the day we were supposed to be married, I remember receiving a phone call from the birth father that he was in jail that day. So I was very relieved that I had, you know, completely severed that relationship before we got to that point. But now here, I really didn't know what I was going to do.
At 15, that had to be just an incredible time to go through that. And how were your family during that time? I imagine it was a shock.
Sure. My dad was not ever very involved, but my mother took it really hard. She looked at it from the perspective of, you know, having to be responsible to raise another child. And we had had some issues in our family that she just really was not, you know, looking forward to having to, you know, protect and worry about another child in the family. So she was really heavy about, you know, encouraging me to go in a home for unwed mothers. at that time, I was really against that. You know, I felt like she was just trying to hide me in the situation, and it was the last place that I wanted to go. But then one day, a series of events happened, and I remember coming home, and my mom was upstairs, and my dad was in the house, and he let me know that my mom was really upset. And I went upstairs and, you know, tried to console her, and she was actually having a nervous breakdown. So here I was at 15, not knowing how to deal with that. My dad had left, and I didn't know what to do. And in it, I remember promising her that I would go to this home for unwed mothers. And that calmed her down enough, you know, after a while. And, you know, that was probably the first conscious choice that I made, that, you know, that I was going to go that route. So we looked into that, and at the time, there was a home was run by Catholic Charities, I believe, and it was off of a church in the local town near us. And we went down there and learned a little bit about it, and I reluctantly, you know, went there. And it was there that I met with a caseworker, and I hated her at first. I hated her because she confronted me with reality. You know, she showed me that at 15, you know, I didn't have a job. I didn't have a place, you know, to raise a baby. How was I really going to do this? So I went into her, you know, week after week, and you know, always frustrated. And going into the process, I remember feeling like adoption was really selfish. Like it was a choice that it was a cop-out because I couldn't take care of my kids, so I would just choose adoption. And much to my surprise, I learned so much that I was the one being selfish because I didn't want to go through the pain of losing a child. But at the same time, you know, I was about to raise a child in an environment that would not have been, you know, conducive for him to have a, you know, a good future.
So, Kim, was this in the 60s or the 70s?
Oh, this was in the 80s.
In the 80s, okay.
You have me a little more outdated. This is in the late 80s.
Yeah, you and I are close, I think. Without telling our ages, that would have been like the 80s.
Yeah, this is the late 80s.
Well, you know, things have changed since then, but even into the 80s, that's not that long ago when you think about it. And
no, but adoptions were mainly closed then. There was no such thing, at least not of my knowledge, of an open adoption at that time.
Correct. I don't even think the word existed.
No, I don't either. So at that time when I first consciously chose adoption, what they would have you do is look at these profiles. And these profiles were so different from what we have today. They were basically like maybe a piece of paper, one-sided, that had a bunch of stuff typed out on it that was just very general, you know, about a family. It would just basically tell me the type of business the father was in, a very little bit about themselves, you know, the mother was a teacher, things like that. And, you know, I had maybe three or four of those to look at.
But no pictures.
And there was no videos, no pictures. No possibility of me asking questions or, you know, finding out more. It was more like, here's your three choices, you know, pick the best one, and, you know, we'll go from there.
Wow.
So at this time, being 15, I was also very small, and the baby inside of me, they felt, wasn't growing enough. So right around maybe the 38th, 37th week of pregnancy, I remember I had just turned 16, and it was right after that they said that I was going to have a C-section. So they scheduled me for a cesarean, and I went in for that, and that turned out to be a blessing in disguise. First of all, they would not put me in the maternity ward because at that time they were very careful about, you know, not having you get upset if you saw a baby and, you know, maybe changing your mind. So they put me off, you know, in a wing separate. And because of the cesarean, I was able to stay in the hospital for 6 days. So that was 6 days that I was able to bond with my child that I would not have been, you know, had they not chosen that route. So I had a healthy baby boy, and he was born. And, you know, like I said, for the first 6 days, I fed him and I held him. And I remember the last day in the hospital, I had picked out a special outfit to put on him. And it was this cute little blue outfit and this special blanket. And I dressed him in it. And I can still remember the nurses came in. And they were like, oh, my God, we're so happy you decided to keep your baby. And I remember I just broke down and I cried. And I thought, no, you know, I can't keep him, but I just want him to go, you know, knowing that he was loved, you know, in this special outfit. So So, you know, they were apologetic, and, you know, that was that. And then a few hours later, I remember a social worker came. And because she was my last, I guess, point of contact with the baby, my heart was endeared to her immediately. And she came in and she let me know that, you know, she was going to be taking the baby and somewhere until, you know, he was placed with his family. And I remember she came in and, you know, she told me, "You're very courageous." She said, "You're a trooper." And I thought, boy, I feel like everything but that right now.
Right.
And she took my son, and I still remember the double doors closing in the hospital.
Yeah.
That's an image that even today, even after being reunited, I still remember that feeling, you know, as those doors closed, knowing that, you know, I may never see him again. So that was pretty traumatic, you know, at that time of my life. And then I had to go back into reality now. You know, I had had this baby, and I remember distinctively going back to the home and getting my stuff and then going back to my own home. And I thought, wow, how am I ever going to do this?
Mm-hmm.
So time went on and everybody would say, oh, you know, you'll feel better after time. And it did take a really long time. I had attended a few support groups, but it's mostly a private healing that nobody can understand until they themselves go through it. You know, it's not like you actually lost a child through death that you can fully grieve. You know, you've lost a child. They're no longer with you. And it just kind of hangs open, that wound, you know, for probably forever for most people.
Oh, I would agree. How did you... Even, like, you went back to school and it was just, like, things were just the way they were before you were pregnant?
Well, at that time, I decided I was going to go for a GED. My parents had moved to a different state. So I got a full-time job and began to, you know, study and work on that. And then at that point in my life, you know, things started to pick up a little bit as far as, you know, I got older and was able to start working and rebuilding my life. And I met my husband at that time, and we got married. And I remember thinking, I want to do everything right now. You know, I just felt like I had done, you know, such a terrible experience and, you know, caused such, you know, grief for myself and for my child that now I was going to do everything perfectly. So we got involved in a church, and we had a large family. And I remember going into my marriage knowing that the person that I married had to know that I had had a child. Because my hope was that one day, despite the odds, you know, I would be able to be reunited with my son. So before I married, that was a big stipulation. And then growing up, I always shared the truth with my children. You know, I felt it was really important because, you know, hopefully they would meet their brother one day. Plus, it was also an important story, you know, to realize that pregnancy is a real possibility, you know, in a situation like that. So everybody grew up knowing, you know, that they had a brother out there.
And then life goes on.
And then
you're a mom.
Okay, so now at this point, you know, I have children. I'm a stay-at-home mom. I'm raising my children. And my marriage started to fall apart. And I went in for counseling for about 5 years of my marriage. And probably at the very ending when I realized that somehow, some way, I was going to have to leave this marriage and take care of all these children myself. And that was a really scary, you know, timing. And I remember I received the phone call. Right about this time, I received this phone call. And it sounded like somebody, maybe a bill collector, because they asked for me by my maiden name. You know, they said, "Hi, can I speak to Kim Noah?" And I thought, boy, I hadn't heard that name in a while. So I didn't answer the first call. It went to an answering machine. And then the next day when they called back, I had already Googled the phone number and saw that it was probably a, you know, collection agency. So I said, "I'm sorry, but, you know, no one lives here by that name." And then the lady says, wait a second, before you hang up, please." And I said, "Yes." And she goes, "Are you Kim Noah? Did you have a son with blonde hair and blue eyes who you dressed in a really cute little blue outfit before you gave him up for adoption?" And I dropped the phone. I mean, I couldn't believe it. I had waited for this call my whole life. And here a lot of milestones had happened up to that point where, you know, I knew my child had turned 18. So I was sure I would hear something, you know, anytime. And I remember calling into the agency and they said, "Oh, I'm so sorry. There was a fire. All of your files were lost. But we do have, you know, certain information. But, you know, the law is that they have to come looking for you." So I had been on an online registry. I had put my name on two online registries, And it just had basic information, like the date of birth. I did include the situation with the outfit that I had placed him in, and just very limited info. Oh, actually, no, I did not include the information with the outfit. They knew about that from the adoption records.
Wow.
So here I'd been in those two places, so really I did not have much media attention or anything on the situation. I remember when my child did turn 18, I had seen this attorney on Oprah, and the conversation on Oprah on the TV was about, you know, finding your loved ones. And there was a particular person on the show who said that she worked, you know, really well at connecting adoptees. So I contacted her right away, and she sent me a list of people that had been born on that day in New York.
Uh-huh.
So, and I guess their driver's records. So I had about maybe 180 names, and I had names that, you know, were clearly different nationalities, but I had no idea, you know, who had adopted my son. So I sent letters out to all 180 of them, and on the top of the letter I just put, "Were you adopted on this day?" And then I said, you know, "I'm looking for you. Here's my email address. Contact me." And I was really hopeful, but I heard back nothing. So here, like I said, you know, after the 18th birthday, I really didn't, know if I would hear anything. 21st birthday goes by, still nothing. Here now, when I think he was about 22 at the time, I received this call. And what it was a call from a search adoption angel. And she did, in fact, work for a collection agency, which is how she was able to, on the side, find people and connect them. So here she had found my number. She had seen that at the night before, at 2 a.m. in the morning from California, a young man got online, and he typed in very limited information about his birth date and what he knew. And within hours, we were matched. It took him having to go online to do that, but within hours, we were matched. So here she's telling me this, and you're afraid to be hopeful because you hear so many stories about reunions that you just want them to be, and then, you know, they're not always the right ones.
Right.
So here we had a name. You know, for the first time in all these years, I had a name for my child. And I can remember the day with my children. We were on the computer. You know, now we had a computer that we could look things up. And we were so excited, you know, we were typing in his name, trying to find him on Facebook, trying to find anything we could, you know, out about him. And at that point then, we were able to speak by phone. So this was like, wow. So we get on the phone together, and we're both really hopeful, but we're cautious. And we start talking, and immediately, I mean, the first thing is, I'm sorry. You know, I don't think that... I don't think that a single birth mother wants to start the conversation without saying, "I'm so sorry," because that's something you hold for so many years, you know, just hoping that, you know, that you'll be forgiven for your choice, or that, you know, your child will at least be able to understand the why behind it.
Right.
And I could not have been gifted with a more understanding child. My son was so gracious from the beginning. You know, of understanding and just being thankful that he was given life and that I made, you know, a better choice for him so that he wasn't stuck, you know, in a poverty situation just because. So here we got to know each other, but we weren't yet fully sure. And I remember I had one last piece of information that I had been holding back that I really didn't want to share until I knew, because it was the only thing I had, and without it, you know, if somebody had said something, I wouldn't know because I wouldn't be sure if they were just telling me that or not. And what that was when I was 15, I had written my son a letter. And I had been told that that letter would be given to him. But I never knew if it would be. And back then, we didn't have photocopiers. So I handwrote a copy of it for myself. And one evening when my son and I were speaking, I said, "There is one way that I'll know if you're my son, and that's that I wrote you this letter." And I started to type the first line, and he returned it with the second.
Oh.
And, you know, it was very, very overwhelming, and we both cried, and we knew, you know, that this was definite. And from that point on, there was, like, no more question. There was just this full ability now to be able to get to know each other. He was in California. So I remember taking a plane by myself for the first time, going over to California, and getting to meet him. And that was such an incredible experience. You know, here we talked for a few weeks, maybe 3 or 4 weeks, but to actually look at him and seeing him, you know, was just such an exciting possibility.
Kim, I have to tell you, I want you to just thank you so much, because this is just, I know it's emotional, but it is just so riveting and so heartfelt in how you're sharing this. When you first saw him, what was your first thought?
That finally my soul had come back to its beginnings.
I can only imagine.
I looked in the eyes of the baby that I had held, you know, until he was 6 days old, and not knowing how we could ever possibly, you know, be reunited again. And then to see that, you know, actually happen, that was totally amazing.
It had to have been. It was as if my soul found its missing piece.
Yeah. Yep. And even today, you know, it's like here we've been reunited for several years now, and it's still, you know, there's still all that feeling and emotion involved.
Uh-huh. And so you guys, obviously, you've been reunited. Is he still, I mean, his the family that raised him, his adoptive family, are they supportive?
Well, here's how that went. When we first met each other, I remember, you know, asking all the general questions that you would ask, like, you know, are you married? Tell me everything about yourself. And I remember there was a hesitation, and I didn't know what it was, and I couldn't put my finger on it, but I just felt like there was something that he was concerned about or holding back or something. And it took a little while to come through, but then I realized that my son was gay. And I remember the night that I went to him and said, I just want you to know that I know that you're gay and that I'm okay with that. Like, that's your sexual orientation. That doesn't diminish my love for you in any way. And here he had been very concerned about if I would be able to accept that, because that had been an issue for him growing up, you know, and here he had finally connected. And there was still that question, you know, how is she going to feel about that?
Uh-huh.
So that really cleared the air for us, you know, just being able to right up front, you know, acknowledge that. And then I went to California and I met him and his fiance at the time. And I met two of the greatest people. I mean, they couldn't compliment each other any more than, you know, they do. They're one of the happiest couples I know. So here, you know, we went to have a meal for the first time. And as we were sitting in the restaurant, I remember his partner saying to me, oh, my God, you hold your cup of coffee the same way that he does. Like, there was just so many different things about us that even though I hadn't raised him, somehow that mannerism and those characteristics were present in him as if I did, and that was incredible to see.
Genetics are an amazing, amazing thing. And, you know, we hope that in educating adoptive families that they understand why having unopened adoption and knowing your birth mom is so important if that's what the birth mom wants. Because truly, I've seen reunifications where a birth mom and her daughter are wearing rings on the same fingers, have the same amount of piercing
yes.
on the same ear, have put tattoos in the same place
yes.
with the same thing. And so some things are so much bigger than we can understand.
Absolutely. And the idea of being able to look in the eyes of where you come from when everybody around you has been, you know, they just don't look like you, or there's just something that isn't quite fully whole, to actually look in the eyes of another person and know that's who I come from. That's a powerful thing for both, you know, the adoptee and the birth mom.
It is. And what I hope in today's time that adoptive families and birth moms understand that you can give your child everything. That too much love is never enough love.
Absolutely. You can be the best parent in the world.
Mm-hmm. And you can have more
but there's
than
still that need.
Yep. And that it's a part of completeness.
Mm-hmm. It is. And the ones that can really understand that can actually really aid in the whole reunion process. For my son and I remember one of the things that I wanted to do, the second most important thing, was I really wanted to thank the parents that had raised him. I had waited years to hug them and to say thank you so much for doing the job that I was not able to do at the time. So
mm-hmm.
we had arranged a reunion, and unfortunately that reunion didn't quite go as I had hoped. There's a lot of fear on the side of the adoptive mother, you know, of what, why am I here? You know, what am I after? A lot of making sure that I was aware of, you know, who really raised him and who really was his mother. And I remember being able to understand that. Like, even though that was hurtful, I remember being able to sit there and understand the fear so it didn't diminish my love for them. You know, I just was able to put that aside and recognize it for what it was and still be happy that at least for, you know, if nothing else, I was able to say thank you. You know, I was able to look in her eyes and thank her for doing that job. And I'd like to hope that one day that, you know, the relationship will extend. But I think there are maybe some reasons why not. I remember one thing that I didn't mention before was that that letter that I had mentioned that my son had had. They never actually gave him that letter. That letter had stayed hidden, and he had found it and photocopied it and then placed it back. So in a way, that letter that is, you know, a beautiful thing for me is probably, you know, also a source of contention for her in the sense that, you know, I don't know how she feels about, you know, that. So that part there, you know, again, and I understand it. I understand the fear behind it. I understand the whole process. But that helps me today, you know, as I reach out to other parents to say, you know, it's just they just want to see. They just want to know. You know, it's not that they want to take back. You know, so the less fear involved, you know, the better, because it's the healthiest for the child. Because now my son has to always feel guilty, you know, when he sees me and things like that, that shouldn't have to be, you know, when there's adults involved in the situation.
Exactly. And in all my years of social work in both domestic and dependency, foster care adoption, where a child is actually removed from a birth family and ends up being adopted, I have yet to see an adoptive family come back and take a child or really attempt. A lot of times what I've experienced, and in my own sons who are both adopted as older children, I helped them find their birth parents. They were more concerned about upsetting their lives. And as my son's birth father would say, I don't want to mess him up anymore. And I had to really encourage him, and I still do, to at least go through Facebook and support what he's doing, because, you know, the not knowing is what makes it so hard.
Absolutely. Once you know, you can accept it and deal with it as it is. But when you don't know, you're always left wondering.
Yes, I agree. And so when I see a birth mom and an adoptive family that really understand what this is about and the strength that a birth mom has to make these decisions, the adoptive families to face their fears of, you know, because birth moms are not scary people. They're amazing. I think the most amazing people on earth, because they do something that very few women are able to do. And I can't imagine a more incredible human being. I really can't. Kim, you still there?
Yes, sorry.
That's okay.
Line got cut a minute.
I want to know, moving forward, you've turned your experiences, which again is so admirable, into your life vocation and to what you do passionately every day. So tell us a little bit, because you are the founder of Birth Moms Today and you're a birth mom advocate. Tell us what that entails.
Sure. I remember when I first started being interested in coaching, life coaching particularly, someone had said to me, you know, you're so passionate about adoption. Why don't you lean more towards that field in your coaching? So that's when I started to really study more about that. And I was very surprised as I found out how many similarities there are with birth mothers and how many birth mothers are so afraid to come forward with their stories. I could remember when I first shared my experience in a church that we went to, how many older people came up to me and said, thank you so much. Nobody knows, but I had a child, you know, when I was younger. And just hearing your story, you know, it means so much to me. And that was like the first time I realized how many older people from the older generation, you know, really were afraid to come forward. So around this time, I began coaching people. It was mostly post-adoption situations where somebody had already placed their baby. And then I started a support group. And it was through that support group that I started to meet people and see that as much as a lot of things have changed today, a lot of things haven't, and the need for support is still, if not more vital, very vital. So that's a little bit, you know, how I got started in birth mom life coaching. So today, you know, I have three goals, and that's really is to provide support for the birth mom who has placed, to educate, you know, the adoptive families on the importance of keeping their post-adoption agreements and, you know, just how much that means to a birth mom. And then to be sure that, you know, the woman that is pregnant today and that is choosing adoption fully understands her decision so that years down the line there isn't the same type of emotional breakdown that happens when, you know, you go into it without the knowledge and the denial.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So today, you know, my son and I, we get together. He's understanding of, you know, the ministry that I'm involved in. He's a big supporter of that. There's many times when, you know, he gets involved and wants to know what's happening. Very interested in reuniting families, so I hope that one day in the future that might be, you know, a real possibility for him. And you know, just be able to be part of it in that way I think would be so great.
I agree. I think the more that people see, the more that they hear, it just it can't be enough, because I think overcoming the history, I mean, really the understanding the best way to do something and for you and what and knowing that you have choices is something that, I mean, your son is how old now?
27.
So 27 years ago, things were done very differently. And I would guess to say, I mean, I did domestic adoption in the, I must be a little older than you, I'd say the late 80s, early 90s. And I totally remember these experiences as a social worker and working with an agency trying to get them to really empower that birth mother. And it was sort of a new concept. And even, you know, the way that things were done, and there were certain in the practice of adoption, there were attorneys out there still and agencies that were like, we'll pick your family, we'll make the decision. And I thought, oh, this can't be. This just can't be. And so it hasn't been that long ago, really. And so the more that people hear, the more that they listen, the more that they get involved, you know, the healthier our children and our birth moms and our adopted families are, that you really can have it all.
Exactly. And I hear great stories like this every day. You know, as I interview adoptive couples, it's for the goal that the birth mom will have more of a knowledge of them so that when she comes to me and, you know, she's looking for a particular family, it's not that I just know of one that I see a picture of, but I actually talked to that family and got to know them and got to hear how they feel about adoption and the birth mom. And that's a really exciting, you know, opportunity. I've heard so many great stories from adoptive couples that have adopted the first time, and they have such a good relationship with their birth mom today that they look forward to, you know, adopting again. And of course, I've heard the stories where they've had bad situations, but people are people, and you're going to have those type of situations in any experience, you know, but the majority of them all share, and it's the ones that are very open, you know, they don't let their ego get in the way. They're just open to understanding that this really is about the child, because it is. The child is the one that has no say in this whole experience that is, you know, become his whole life. So here, you know, it's the parents who really get that and who really want to allow this child to unfold to be who he or she was meant to be. They make some of the great parents. And most of the time, it's that they were adopted themselves. And I always love, you know, when there's a couple who has been adopted themselves, you know, as a child, now wants to adopt because they really have an insight, you know, different than others.
Absolutely. And I think that as we look at generational adoption, what we see is that once adoption touches your life, it forever changes. And as you grow as a family in your own life, you make decisions, but it's such a unique and special experience that I think, honestly, it just changes your life forever.
Absolutely. Could not agree more.
How would someone reach out to find you if they wanted to connect with birth moms today and they wanted some coaching, some help?
Well, a lot of information is on my website on Birth Moms Today. You'll be able to find out about our online support groups and the different coaching series that we have there. And then if anyone would like to speak by phone, they can call me at 717-517-2334.
That is wonderful. Kim, I just want to thank you so very much for opening and sharing your heart and your story. And, you know, I sit here just in awe and so emotional because I really, really pray that people out there, families out there, birth moms out there, hear this message. So thank you again for being here.
Well, thank you, Connie. And it's so important and healing for the birth mom to share her story. I don't know what it is about it, but every birth mom that comes into my support group online, they say the more that they're able to talk about it in a safe environment, the more that they're able to face everyday life and heal from, you know, the immediate trauma, because they'll carry it forever, but how they live in the day-to-day life can be, you know, affected positively depending on the support they receive.
That is so true, and I really believe sharing your story, it heals. It heals.
Thank you, Connie. Thanks for having me today.
Well, thank you. And for those of you who are listening, we thank you. For those of you who will tune in later, thank you for archiving this and pulling it up. Anyone that wants to reach out to Adoption Associates, their number is 1-800-677-2367 or www.adoptionassociates.net. And I hope everyone has a fantastic weekend and a happy Friday. Thanks.
Thanks, Connie.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Come to Dickie's Barbecue when you're ready to talk about catering, whether it's a family reunion, a company picnic, or any type party. From little bitty parties to great big shindigs, our catering experts arrange everything, so you worry about nothing. We offer full-service catering, delivery buffets, even box lunches, with meat that's hand-rubbed, slow-smoked over real hickory wood in all of our stores every night. We may do your catering, but you're always our guest at Dickie's. If you love barbecue, come to Dickie's. We're a place that speaks your language.
Dickie's, we speak barbecue.